Texas has a reputation for being tough on crime, but beneath the surface, in the darkness, is an incredible number of mysteries left undone.
There are monsters among us.
There are approximately 20,000 unsolved homicides throughout the Lone Star State. Cases that have gone cold, waiting for new information or evidence. On Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime, we tell in-depth stories of these unsolved murders and missing persons cases, from the historic and mysterious 1948 disappearance of Denton co-ed Virginia Carpenter, to the unspeakably brutal 2014 slaying of Delisa Kelly in Dallas.
This was personal. It was personal.
Join us weekly as we attempt to keep these terrible and tragic stories alive in hopes the victims' loved ones can one day see justice. You can subscribe to Gone Cold, Texas True Crime, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Before we begin today's episode, I'd like to give a few shout-outs. First of all, I want to say thank you to JT Hosack for writing and researching this case. I'd also like to thank Victoria Zeller for her initial research in this case. And finally, I want to thank those of you that have signed up for my Patreon since my last episode. So I want to thank Missy, Raylene, Molly, Deanna. Thank you all so much for being patrons. If you'd like to support this show, go to patreon.com/trueconsequences, or you can click on the link tree in the show notes below.
True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Lundeen.
5 months. I think we can agree a lot can happen in that time frame. A lot of living can be done and accomplished in nearly half of a year. Dreams can be pursued, lives can be changed, and hearts can be won. 5 months, or almost 22 weeks, 152 days, 3,650 hours, or 219,000 minutes. If you sit back and recognize the breakdown of 5 months, the previously mentioned statement can be seen as true. Then again, in some contexts, 5 months isn't long enough. 5 months with friends before moving to a new school, town, state, or even country. 5 months before transitioning to another job. A diagnosis of 5 months to live. 5 months is simply not enough. It's not long enough. In the context of baby Brianna Lopez, 5 months was all she had. 5 months of life was what her immediate family allotted to her. Brianna Lopez, an innocent 5-month-old, struggled to survive a premature birth, a collapsed lung, and while she was becoming better and stronger, her family chose to play Karen, the ferryman of the dead, dipping their poisonous oars in and taking her, involuntarily, across the waters to the afterlife. This is a tragic case of baby Brianna Lopez. This is a story filled with horrible realizations, sobering statistics, and chilling conclusions. I am Eric Carter Lundeen, and this is True Consequences. We have covered a lot on True Consequences. You've experienced some of the worst. In over 60 episodes, we have discussed over 45 hours of crime, deceit, failures of the justice system, and more. This case is not necessarily worse than the others, as making a comparison between loss and violence is dark, and it isn't the way True Consequences is delivered to you. That being said, the nature of this case takes us to some of the darkest corners of true crime. If you are at all triggered by child abuse of any kind, I believe it's important to let you know, right now, that this case weaves a tale of terrible actions towards an infant. It's a heavy story. It's an indication of something gone wrong. Not just in Las Cruces, New Mexico, but in the United States, and even the world. I think it's important to gather an understanding of the staggering child abuse problem in this country. I know you've heard this from me before, but the main problem is that most abuse remains silent. Most of the trends, statistics, both statewide and nationwide, are not typically spoken about. Not here, though. Let's delve into some of these trends that have been seen and reported, and it seems like reported on closed ears. From the time of 1990 to 1994, the number of cases of child abuse or neglect rose from 861,000 to over 1 million. This was a rate of 15 per 100,000 children under the age of 18. In a state of grace, the numbers decreased from 1994 to 1999, and then leveled off from 1999 until 2006, dropping again in 2012. Both child abuse and neglect began to rise again in 2017. There were over 670,000 maltreated children substantiated in the United States. There are two things with this statement that we need to focus on. The first is that these are, quote, substantiated cases. There are plenty of cases that remain true even though they don't seem to be substantiated. The second is that the data here reflects states' definitions of what constitutes maltreatment, which is really something to consider, right? Legal definitions of child abuse and maltreatment are different among states. So here's two examples. In Virginia, the state defines maltreatment as any parent, guardian, or other person responsible for the care of a child under the age of 18 who, by willful act or willful omission or refusal to provide any necessary care for the child's health, causes or permits serious injury to the life or health of such a child, is guilty of a Class 4 felony. New Mexico defines this in a way that breaks everything out without a specific summarization. A person who commits intentional child abuse of a child 12 to 18 years of age that results in the death of the child is guilty of a first-degree felony. The person who commits intentional abuse of a child less than 12 years of age that results in the death of a child is guilty of a first-degree felony resulted in the death of a child. There are 15 other breakdowns here within just the one definition. I'm not sure why child abuse cannot be defined across state lines or federally, nor do I understand why abuse, no matter what the result, cannot be prosecuted in the same fashion. But this isn't the case, and perhaps not the time to discuss it. Let's look at a few more trends. As mentioned before, since 2015, there have been an increase in the number of victims who suffered maltreatment. Of the over 3.5 million children who were the subject of an investigation of alternative response in 2018, 678,000 were determined to be victims of maltreatment. 60.8% of victims were neglected, 10.7% were physically abused, and 7% were sexually abused. Total of 17.7% of children were either physically or sexually abused, which may not sound like a lot, but out of 678,000, that equals 72,546 children. If you use the total number of children as a subject of an investigation, that equates to 374,500 children who have been either physically or sexually abused. But here's the thing. Children are not widgets. They're not Apple Watches or Android phones. You know, they don't come off assembly lines. You can't really boil them down to nuts and bolts. Each life is impacted by child abuse, represents a countless number of lives that are impacted. In one study, 80% of 21-year-olds who reported childhood abuse met the criteria for at least one psychological disorder. So even after the state government considers, quote, child abuse, the impacts reside with the individual for a lifetime. Impacts do not live in the psychological realm only. The long-time financial impact of abuse and neglect is absolutely stunning. For new cases in 2008 alone, lifetime estimates of lost worker productivity, healthcare costs, special education costs, child welfare expenditures, and criminal justice expenditures added up to $124 billion. Now keep in mind, this was 2008, 13 years ago, and reports have dramatically increased. So, we've looked at some of the nationwide statistics. Let's take a moment to zoom in on New Mexico. The following statistics come from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families webpage, and these are from 2019. There were 475,838 children in New Mexico in 2019. Child maltreatment victims totaled over 8,000. 54.7 children out of 1,000 were victims of an allegation of child maltreatment. Total proven child maltreatment victims were 16.9 children for every 1,000. 2.3 children per 100,000 died as a result of child abuse or maltreatment. When you run the math based on the total number of children in New Mexico, that means 11 children died as a result of child abuse in 2019. New Mexico's rate of abuse and neglect has been far higher than the national average in each of the past 5 years for which data are available. Not one child, not one, should ever have to experience any form of maltreatment or abuse, whether verbal, physical, or sexual. Conclusive studies have demonstrated that child abuse and neglect results in permanent changes to the developing human brain. This could lead to psychological and emotional problems in adulthood, to include psychological disorders or substance abuse. Dr. Martin Tiker and colleagues at McLean Hospital, Harvard Medical School, and Northeastern University found that when people experienced three or more types of abuse, 53% suffered from major depression at some point, and 40% had post-traumatic stress disorder. Of course, it's important to keep in mind that there are factors that impact the effect of child abuse long-term. These include how often the abuse occurred, what age the child was, who the abuser was, whether or not the child had a loving adult in their life, how long the abuse lasted, if there were any interventions in the abuse, the kind and severity of the abuse, among other factors. But let's not lessen the horrendous torture child abuse brings down upon a child. Any child abuse at all, any at all, on any level, and for any length of time, is unacceptable and deplorable. Brianna Lopez was born on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2002, to Stephanie Lopez and Andy Walters. Brianna was her second child after Andy Walters Jr., and she was born prematurely. As what some would refer to as a preemie, Brianna had some difficulty postnatal and needed medical assistance. She had a collapsed lung. However, that was resolved, and Brianna moved home to a double-wide trailer in Las Cruces, New Mexico, with her mother Stephanie, father Andy Walters, brother Andy Walters Jr., grandmother Patricia Walters, grandmother's boyfriend Herbert Harding, and her uncle, Robert Walters Jr., as well as Stephanie's brother, Stephen Lopez, Patrick Harding, and Herbert Harding's son. If you are counting, that's 9 people total in one double wide. Living conditions were not entirely ideal, and there was very little space as one could imagine, but they made it work. Patricia and Herbert shared a room, and Robert Walters Jr. and Patrick Harding each shared a room. Stephanie and Andy shared a room with baby Brianna and Andy Jr. To the side of their futon lay Stephen Lopez on the floor. Baby Brianna spent the majority of her time in a bouncer, which is a stationary seat that sits low to the ground. Once an infant is strapped in, ideally their movements can help to create bouncing or rocking motions. You see, the crib would not fit in the room of Stephanie and Andy, so it sat out in the living room while Brianna either slept in the bed between Stephanie and Andy or in the bouncer. In fact, every interview and interaction that police had with the family, people told them that Brianna was usually spending time in her bouncer unless she was being picked up to be changed. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. In addition to Brianna sleeping between Stephanie and Andy, Andy Jr. slept by their feet. Fast forward to July 19th, 2002 on a Tuesday morning. Mesilla Valley Regional Dispatch Authority received a call from a crying Stephanie Lopez. Baby Brianna was not breathing. She was blue and she was bruising. During an interview with police, Karina Pirtle, the dispatcher, reported,
"I picked up the line. Basically, I told the lady that was on the phone, 'This is the ambulance dispatcher. What's going on?' She advised me, 'My baby's not breathing.' At which point I said, 'Okay, confirming that you're saying that your baby's not breathing, what has happened?' And she advised me that the baby had fallen during the night, or this morning, and that now they found her and she's not breathing. I asked her, 'You just now found her and she wasn't breathing?' And she said yes."
Stephanie Lopez reported to the dispatcher that Brianna fell out of the bed when asked about whether or not Stephanie was upset. The conversation went like this.
"She appeared upset. She was not hysterical upset. She was crying upset, but I've dealt with, you know, in my past, more calls where we get baby not breathing. You know, they always call, 'We're not breathing.' And those are hysterical. She was not a hysterical upset, but she was crying."
During the call, Karina walked Stephanie through performing CPR. As Stephanie attempted CPR on a lifeless Brianna, Andy stood next to her, and eventually his mother Patricia arrived after borrowing a truck, speeding home from work. It's safe to assume that the trailer soon became something out of a nightmare. Voices were raised, yelling ensued, all while Stephanie was standing over a still Brianna providing CPR.
There was a bunch of commotion. The screaming and the yelling was going on. This is, you know, after the in-laws got there, there was a bunch of screaming and yelling, and I was like, "Madam, please, you need to stay focused with me."
Karina asked Stephanie to continue CPR. Stephanie stated that the responders were there. Karina wanted to stay on the phone with Stephanie until they were in the residence, a common practice of most dispatchers. Stephanie hung up on Karina. At this point, the Doña Ana Fire Department arrived, and soon after the paramedics, Sonny Torbett, one of the paramedics, walked into the single-wide trailer and reported,
"We were met by two young Hispanic males, neither which said anything to me or seemed in any distress. I noticed the baby laying on the kitchen floor with Doña Ana Volunteer Fire Department, trying to give breath to the baby. My first impression on visual was that this baby had been... had a number of bruises and several different stages of healing up to recent to maybe 1 to 2 weeks. In healing stage, green bruises, dark blue bruises, and I also noticed a very large dermatome right at the front, now at the very top of the baby's head where bones hadn't closed."
For someone to observe this in an infant within the first minute of arriving is mind-blowing. The injuries were visible, evident, and unable to be ignored. In asking Stephanie how long the bruises had been on the baby, her response was that she didn't know. They saw them there in the morning and that they were new. Stephanie also said that at 3 a.m., Brianna rolled out of a crib, falling to the floor. They picked the baby up and put her to bed. Brianna was immediately transported to Memorial Medical Center and fell under the care of Dr. Boyd and Yvonne Mouchette. Despite their efforts, as well as the efforts of everyone who came in contact with baby Brianna, Dr. Boyd pronounced 5-month-old Brianna Lopez dead at 11:18 a.m. As is practice, Dr. Boyd and Nurse Mouchette went to notify the family in the hospital. But Stephanie and Andy were not there. Upon notification, Dr. Boyd asked what happened. Yvonne Mouchette reports, quote, "She said the baby had been lying on the bed next to her at 7 a.m. this morning, and the husband had found the infant on the floor, wrapped in, swaddled her, and put her in a bouncer. That is what she recalled. She said that she woke up at 8 o'clock and saw the blanket was too close to the baby's face, so she pulled it down, went back to sleep, and then she said at about 10, she woke up. She said that in between then, she pulled down the blanket, went to sleep, and then she said the baby had woken, and that the dad was feeding the baby, and he had put her back in the bouncer, and then she said at 10 o'clock she called the ambulance because she wasn't breathing," end quote. At this point, we've heard two different stories from Stephanie. The first story was that she fell out of the crib, and the second one was that she fell out of the bed. In addition, within the discussion with the nurse and the doctor, Stephanie said Brianna fell out at 3 a.m., and then it was 7 a.m., between the stories and the initially observed bruising, things were not adding up for anyone involved. Soon after, if not during all of this, an investigation began. The trailer had become a crime scene, and evidence was appropriately bagged, tagged, and sent to the station. Deputy Michael Kenny said, quote, "These items were pointed out to us and noted for collection purposes, and included soiled diapers, wipes, a child's seat, a large gray office chair, and a carpet sample. These items were inventoried on evidence sheets at the time of collection. During one point during collection, Investigator Wright arrived and allowed us to view photographs taken of the victim. Investigator Wright asked us to evaluate the photos to see if we could identify any pattern injuries to the victim's body. We could not." End quote. You see, as soon as Brianna was declared dead, an investigator brought in a photographer to ensure photos were taken of all the injuries prior to the autopsy, which had been ordered due to the conflicting nature of the stories and injuries. Because we were able to obtain a majority of the reports from investigators, we are able to gather more information regarding first-hand experiences. Following entry is from Captain Robert Jones. "If you're uncomfortable with discussions of various types of injuries, especially those of a child, or in this case, infant, you may want to fast forward just a bit. It's truly not for everyone. The lengthy description has been edited as some content does not need to be related, and it will be discussed a little bit later." Captain Robert Jones was quoted as saying, quote, I entered the trauma room where the body of Brianna was lying on an examination table. Dr. Robin Edward was present in the room and was conducting an examination of the body. I did observe that there were numerous bruises or contusions on the face of Brianna, as well as the sides of her head. There was a breathing tube inside her mouth, and the body was partially clad in a diaper. During the examination, I could see bruising that appeared to be from human bite marks. The bruising was on Brianna's right cheek, right leg, back, neck, and head. I asked Dr. Edwards if the injuries could have been the result of a fall from a bed. Dr. Edwards told me that if the injuries had been the result of a fall, it would have been from the top of a five-story building. End quote. A five-story building. What happened to Brianna? There is no phrase that could more vividly describe the hell that Brianna went through. In addition to the initial comments, the following day an autopsy was performed. Dr. Joseph O'Hara, pathologist, Dr. Karen Campbell, MD, and Dr. Homer Campbell, DDS, conducted the autopsy. These were the injuries that were found to the body of baby Brianna Lopez. Approximately 11 human bite marks varying in size throughout the body, all in different stages of healing. Later, all bite marks would be determined to be made by an adult. Bucket handle fractures of both legs typically caused by quick, jerky motions to the legs. Healing fractures of the 7th and 8th right lateral ribs, a 34mm laceration to the anus, a skull fracture present posterior parietal site, a skull fracture to the occipital site, global cerebral edema, subdural hematoma, subdural arachnoid hematoma, optic nerve hemorrhaging in the left eye and right eye consistent with shaken baby syndrome. In Brianna's 5 months of life, this very innocent and sweet child was put through hell without a voice of her own to be able to say stop. It was with this knowledge that the investigators knew they needed to get to the truth. Falling out of bed no more than 2 feet off the ground does not cause the bruising and other injuries found in the autopsy. Although initial questioning was complete, it was time to bring in every resident of that trailer, which was no simple feat. If you remember, the people living in the trailer included Stephanie Lopez, Andy Walters, Brianna Lopez, Andy Walters Jr., Stephen Lopez, Patricia Walters, Herbert Harding, Patrick Harding, and Robert Walters Jr. And on that night, Mark Hernandez was also visiting. On the day of baby Brianna's death, investigators wasted no time. July 19, 2002 saw what records indicated to be 11 different interviews. Three of those interviews have been mentioned previously. Those were of the paramedic, dispatcher, and nurse from the hospital. Investigators decided to split up after the initial interviews. They elected to meet back up. Captain Robert Jones said, quote, "A meeting was held in the training room with all individuals who were involved, interviewing the various people at the main station. During this time, investigators briefed each other on what was learned during the various interviews. This served multiple purposes. Number one, they were able to talk to every person residing in the home. Number two, they were able to speak to all of them, presumably before they were able to speak to each other. And finally, they were able to come back together after the initial interviews to compare notes." End quote. So what was discovered in these initial interviews? Prior to the interrogations at the station, investigator Mark Perea and Captain Robert Jones questioned Stephanie Lopez at the hospital. Perea and Jones discussed what the doctors told them and showed Stephanie the photos they took of Brianna's injuries. Stephanie said that Brianna had been healthy. There was very little crying, if any, and that she rolled off their bed. If she ever leaves to go anywhere, she leaves the kids with her brother Stephen. Stephanie reported they drink once in a while and that her and Andy rarely have arguments. The night in question, she drank 3 beers and went to bed around 10 p.m. The next thing she remembers was that she was up at 7 a.m., watched Andy take Brianna because she was crying. He fed her and brought her back swaddled in a blanket. She awoke again, saw that Brianna's face was kind of covered, pulled the blanket down, and went back to sleep. She finally awoke around 10:45 to Andy trying to wake up Brianna. He reported to Stephanie that she did not want to wake up. Stephanie called her mother-in-law. She hung up the phone and called 911 after being directed to do so. During this time, Andy mentioned something about Brianna falling off the bed. She did tell investigators that Andy and Steve threw Brianna up in the air at times, which was immediately concerning. Stephanie also said that she tried to tell Andy 3 times over the past month to stop doing that because she, quote, "keeps hitting her head on the ceiling." When she had Brianna on the kitchen counter attempting CPR, Stephanie noticed that she had a bruise on her cheek and ear, which she said was probably from the bouncer she sleeps in. She also reported that there was something red coming from Brianna's nose when she was performing CPR. Upon showing Stephanie photos of the marks on Brianna, she denies recognizing any of them, and she says she hasn't seen them before. She does pass blame on biting to her son, Andy Jr., saying that he might have done that. As Andy was not at the hospital when the notification of death occurred, nor was he there when Stephanie was questioned, his questioning took place at the station, as did the rest of the information that we will share. That same day, July 19th, 2002, Andy was questioned by investigator Lindell Wright and Sergeant Edward Miranda. Initially, when he spoke on what happened, he said that he was watching a movie with Stephanie and the babies. After the movie, he was playing Grand Theft Auto 3 when Stephanie fell asleep. He said he wasn't even paying attention when Stephanie was taking care of Brianna, and that was once before bed. This wasn't a new thing, though. While speaking to the investigators, he said that he hardly ever picks her up when he gets home because he wants to relax. He reported the last time he picked Brianna up was 2 days prior to her death. He also said he hardly saw anything on her other than the bruise on her head from, quote, falling, and one mark on her back from what he says was his son, Andy Jr. At this point in the interview, he increases the number of people who were in the room. He said that he found Brianna on the floor at around 3 a.m. and put her back in her bouncer, and then went to the bathroom. He didn't think much about it because she'd fallen out of the bouncer before. He specified that she wasn't crying per se, just grunting a little. During this interview, initially Andy says he didn't toss Brianna up in the air, and he never has. He passed that blame on to Stephen, his brother-in-law. He said that Stephen might have thrown her into the ceiling that night. Eventually, he states that the injuries on Brianna are probably from the ceiling and that he and Stephen were tossing her in the air.
Describe it, because the tape recorder doesn't got eyes. That one, and the one right here from the ceiling, from the floor. She dropped on the floor or what? Yes, sir. You missed her. There you go. Thank you. You accidentally missed her and she fell. I don't know, because... Okay. You threw her up and you missed her on her way down. Go ahead and describe. Well, I was messing with her and she hit her head and I did again. She hit her head again and I did it and she fucking slipped out of my hand.
Andy also revealed during this interview that Stephanie is not guiltless in this either, as she sometimes gets angry at Brianna and tosses her to the bouncer from 2 feet away, adding that she also has pulled on Brianna's ears. But that couldn't have been the entire story about Brianna in the past, as the review of the x-rays showed cracked ribs, bucket handle fractures of both legs, and so much more. At the same time, investigator Greg Boglin interviewed Stephen Lopez, Brianna's brother, who was immediately read his rights. Stephen had been living in the trailer since May 2002 and said that he was at home the night of Brianna's death and he went to bed around 2 a.m. They watched a movie that night in the bedroom. Stephen woke up twice that night. He saw Andy take a shower in the morning and then Robert came in and woke him up saying something about the baby. He went back the night before and said that Robert, Andy's little brother, came in at night sometime between 10 or 11 p.m. and stayed with them for a little while in the room. Mark, a friend of Andy and Robert's, was there as well. After the movie, they played PlayStation 2 and he and Andy stayed up. The last thing he told them during the interview was that they all drank and knocked out a case of beer that night, but something wasn't adding up. To add to the confusion, Patricia Walters and Herbert Harding were interviewed that day as well. They both insisted they had never seen marks on Brianna and that typically Andy and Stephanie stay on their side of the trailer while Patricia and Herbert stay on theirs. As Brianna's injuries became more widely known, investigators had initial information from their interviews to go off of and knew they needed more. They needed more information from those in the trailer. Stephen Lopez was called back to interview on July 23rd, 2002. We're going to take a quick break. And we're back. As the investigator spoke with Stephen, revelations occurred. Steve, after Andy was in bed asleep, took Brianna and did something, but stopped because he realized it was wrong. He said in the interview that it was because he was drunk. When he was done, he realized what he had done to Brianna and left her on the floor, which explains why Andy woke up and saw Brianna on the floor and placed her in her bouncer. Here's a little snippet from the interview with Stephen. Investigator, What I want to know is why. Stephen, I can't tell you. I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe I was too drunk, okay? Investigator, so you're too drunk, but you're having sex? Stephen, that's what I was thinking. Investigator, okay, you're having sex with a baby. Why did you stop? Why did you stop having sex with a baby? That you ought to know. If you stopped, you realized what you were doing was wrong, and you stopped. You don't know, but you do agree that you had sex with baby Brianna, correct? Stephen, yes. Investigator, okay, but you just don't know why you stopped? Come on, answer my question. Stephen, no, I don't know why I stopped. I don't know why I did it. From what we know, Brianna was gone from where Stephanie placed her before she went to bed between 1 and 3 a.m. At that time, Stephen is placed with Brianna. Stephen cooperated with police and gave them the shorts that he was wearing that night. The investigators are closely moving towards a version of truth that seems to match with the evidence that was found. Patricia Walters is brought back in by the investigators, Greg Boglin and Robin Gokovich, to understand more of the dynamic in the family home. Despite having an answer in reference to the sexual abuse of Brianna, they were trying to understand what it was like living in the double-wide trailer, especially considering the age of some of the injuries discovered. During this time, Patricia told investigators that she doesn't see her granddaughter every day. She might see her 3 or 4 times a week, despite living in the trailer with her entire family. Patricia said, quote, they stay on their half and I stay on my half, end quote. Patricia is then walked through the morning she received a call from Stephanie, her son's wife. Patricia, quote, I borrowed a truck from one of my brothers. Investigator, okay. When you got there, what did you see? Patricia, she had the baby on the counter and she was trying to, she was on the phone and gave her CPR, end quote. Patricia reported that Brianna also had dust in her hair. In addition to not seeing the baby much, she said she had never seen the baby get a bath, nor has she ever seen Brianna get changed. Patricia doesn't offer much in the way of reporting any injuries that were seen on Brianna. Either she says she's never seen much, or she doesn't see Brianna that often. The only thing she noticed was the bruising reported in the same way by multiple other family members. Following this, Andy was re-interviewed on the 25th of July, 2002. And during this time, Lindell Wright asked him for more specific information regarding his treatment of Brianna. He immediately denies tossing Brianna up now and puts the blame solely on Stephen. The interview immediately ends as Andy was now trying to walk back everything he had said just a couple of days before. It can only be speculation, but since Stephen admitted to his abuse of Brianna, is it possible that Andy saw a way out by blaming everything on Stephen? Well, if he did, it really didn't work for him. Stephen was brought back again on July 26th and questioned more specifically about a few items. Investigators communicated to Stephen that Andy told them a lot. Stephen said that Andy threw Brianna up and she hit her head on the ceiling. He then admitted that Brianna might have fallen when she was thrown up and was missed as she came back down. 5 days later, Robert Walters, Andy's brother, is brought in for subsequent questioning. He said he does not see the baby often because he's always working. This is the same answer as many of those in the trailer. He said that he saw pictures of baby Brianna. He hadn't seen anything like this. Normally, he reported she had little scratches on herself from her own nails, but nothing like what was depicted in the photos. As investigators learned, a friend of Andy and Robert's, an employee of Patricia's, Mark Hernandez, was also in the bedroom the night of Brianna's death. The interview takes some time as Mark was confused about his own timeline. Initially, this was cause for concern. However, it looks like Mark was simply confused as to when he arrived and left. In respect to mentioning the care that he observed Brianna receiving, he stated that Stephanie only picked up Brianna once, the entire time he was there. He personally never saw Brianna being tossed in the air. He did report that as soon as he left, Robert went back to the room. On August 4, 2002, Jenny and Robert Montiel approached investigators to speak about Stephanie Lopez. Typically, this kind of information could be glossed over, deemed unnecessary. However, it was reported that Stephanie continued to promise to bring baby Brianna by, but it would inevitably turn into her leaving Brianna at the trailer, which caused speculation that Brianna was not seen much in public. Perhaps this was due to a mother's worry because of how sick Brianna had been when she was born, or because Stephanie didn't want anyone to see the bruising and injuries on baby Brianna. Eventually, December 2003, an inmate from Doña Ana Detention Center came forward. His name was Troy Hall. He was housed with Robert Harding in the medical unit. And there's a lot that can be said about an inmate's testimony, but there are 2 or 3 things that tend to lead me to believe in what Troy was saying. The first is that although Troy asked for a deal in return for providing the information that he did, it was very clear that he was not going to receive one. The second is how child abuse is treated in prison. The final item is that Troy said he would be willing to testify in court despite not being given any deal whatsoever. In order to fully capture and understand the testimony of Troy Hall, here is what he was told by Robert Walters in its entirety. Quote, "I guess I befriended him because I always thought he was a youngster in some trouble, and he started to have confidence in me. When Robert's brother was leaving, he ran up to the chow port and they both started crying. They weren't crying about what had happened. They were crying to the fact that the little brother, he started crying because he's my little brother. And I was just as much at fault. He goes, we did that stuff together. He told me that they were passing, throwing the baby back and forth, and that the baby fell off the table one time, and because they were cooking crack, he couldn't catch the baby. They gave the baby shotgun crack hits, so to keep it from crying. He was saying he was all, thanks a lot, Mom, and this and that. And I was just wondering, what the hell did that mean? And then he was telling his girlfriend on the phone something that they were going to live in the same house that happened to, or something like that. No concern. His voice was all I could. The way he made it sound to me was like the way people get their dogs high or something. And they just blow a hit of weed in the dog's face or something. Like, it wasn't even a human being. And that's why it just really made me, I don't know, I told all the guards in jail." End quote. As if this testimony wasn't damning enough, Troy came back with more information as his roommate Robert Walters did not know he spoke with the police the first time. More damning evidence, if what Troy says is to be believed, was brought to the interrogation room that day. During one of Troy's conversations with Robert, he learned that at one point, in reference to the treatment of Brianna, brothers Andy and Robert left the trailer to do something that morning. They left Brianna by herself, in the home for an hour and a half with no one watching her. There might have been people in the trailer, but when they returned, Brianna was a bluish purple and, quote, the baby wasn't moving and stuff. And his brother picked up the baby and said it's dead. And he says he freaks out. He goes, all right, I told my brother I'm gone when he went and told his mom right away, end quote. This is the part of the testimony where, in all honesty, you could not write this. Immediately upon leaving the trailer to tell his mother and his mother returning, Robert allegedly tells Troy, quote, his mom basically came over to the house and saw what was going on. They all sat down and she goes, look, this is what's going to happen. We're all going to end up going down for this baby's abuse and everything else that has been going on. So she kind of told them, you know, that this is what we're going to do. We're going to try and say this to get us all out of this. And to my understanding, I guess it's the mother of the baby that kind of screwed up the whole thing when she started talking. In addition, Patricia told Andy that since he was the father, most of the blame will fall to him. So it's better that he just take the rap for it and the family can work together to get him out of it. Again, this is alleged. Not only that, but it's via a conversation between two inmates at the Doña Ana Detention Center. If this is indeed the truth, the corruption and manipulation by Patricia Walters is on another level. The ability that she had from the date of Brianna's death brings me to believe that she would sink to any low to ensure her family got away with this. And yes, at a certain point, everyone wants to fight for their family. Hell, I would fight tooth and nail for my family. However, that would stop at the abuse of an innocent and guiltless child, or any child for that matter. Patricia looked right past the death of her own granddaughter to ensure her family stayed together, or at least did not see the other side of vertical bars. After all this, what do we know about the murder and abuse of Brianna Lopez? We know that, in summary, she was abused for a much longer period than the one time and that one incident on July 19, 2002. On the night of July 18th, upon returning home from everyone's respective workplace and buying a case of beer along the way, Stephanie and Steven Lopez, Andy and Robert Walters, Mark Hernandez, baby Brianna Lopez, and Andy Walters Jr. were all in Stephanie and Andy's room, located in Patricia Walters and Herbert Harding's trailer. They sat around drinking, watching a movie, and then switched to play Grand Theft Auto on their PlayStation. Stephanie drank three beers and went to bed, placing Brianna in the bouncer after checking on her once the entire night. This was evident through testimony regarding that night. Andy Jr. went to bed as it was late. Mark Hernandez left, walked out by Robert Walters at around midnight. Robert returned to the room where Andy and Steven were still awake. Brianna may or may not have been awake in the bouncer at that time. According to Steven and Andy, Brianna was tossed back and forth, up and down. She hit her head on the ceiling multiple times and was dropped at least twice. And if inmate Troy Larson's testimony is to believe, Brianna also hit the corner of the table on her way down once. During this time Brianna was being tossed, they were taking hits of crack. Times in which Brianna was dropped occurred as they were taking hits and not paying attention to Brianna, as she was being sent in the air towards one another. At around 1 a.m., Brianna was placed in the bouncer and Andy, Robert, and Steven went to bed. Brianna was left in that bouncer having collided with the ceiling, the floor, and the edge of the table multiple times, not to mention having crack exhaled into her lungs in order to, quote, keep her from crying, end quote. As everyone went to bed, Stephen either awoke or stayed awake and sexually abused baby Brianna. Around 2 a.m. or 2:30 a.m., Stephen left baby Brianna on the floor by her bouncer. Andy woke at 3 a.m. and saw Brianna lying there. Confused, he picked her up, placed her in the bouncer, and then went to the bathroom. He returned to bed, and at 7 a.m., he took her to change her diaper and feed her. She was not crying so much as grunting, according to his report. He, quote, changed her diaper, swaddled her in a blanket, which was accidentally laid over her face, and then went back to bed. Stephanie Lopez awoke at 8 a.m., noticed the blanket over Brianna's face. She removed the blanket and went back to bed. It was at that time that Andy said something to the effect of Brianna falling off the bed around 3 a.m. Stephanie fell back asleep and awoke at 10 a.m. to a bluish Brianna, only to call Patricia Walters and then dispatch to have the first responders come to her home. During the trial, prosecution argued that all five adults living in the trailer knew about the abuse and they had allowed it to happen for the length of baby Brianna's short life. Defense lawyers argued this, saying that their clients had no idea what was going on to Brianna. It was hard to believe, as Rebecca Irvine, the supervisor medical investigator, testified that Brianna suffered skull, arm, leg, and rib fractures, and that she sustained bruising to her face, head, and genitals. Not all of these injuries were from the night of July 18th, or early morning of July 19, 2002. By the end of the trial, Stephanie and Stephen Lopez, Andy, Robert, and Patricia Walters were all found guilty. Stephanie Lopez, Brianna's mother, was convicted of negligent child abuse resulting in death and was sentenced to 27 years in prison. Stephen Lopez, Brianna's uncle, was convicted on intentional child abuse resulting in death, conspiracy to commit child abuse resulting in death, and first-degree criminal sexual penetration. He was sentenced to 57 years in prison. Andy Walters, Brianna's father, was convicted of intentional child abuse resulting in death, conspiracy to commit child abuse resulting in death, first-degree criminal sexual penetration, and two counts of child abuse. He was sentenced to 63 years in prison. The other adults in the trailer were not immediately charged. However, the two other children living in the home, Andy Jr. and Patrick Harding, were taken into protective custody shortly after Brianna's death. Patricia Walters and Brianna's uncle, Robert Walters Jr., were eventually charged with failure to report child abuse and neglect. The community rallied around baby Brianna. They raised money and paid for Brianna's casket, funeral, and burial. Not one member of Brianna's family, not one, claimed her body. Because of this, the community did, a tribute not only to baby Brianna, but to all children who go through this abuse silently, without a voice, as the only type of, quote, love they ever knew, or know even to this day. Sadly, there is no photograph of a living baby Brianna. Not one photo was taken of her during her short time on Earth. The only photos that exist are of her in a mortuary after being declared dead. In order to remember Brianna as she was, someone took the photo and edited it in Photoshop, removing the bruises and scars. As if to spit in the community's face, Brianna's family, after the burial, then placed a cage around her grave so no one could show any amount of love to her. There's no justification for the treatment that Brianna experienced. There's no reason, as mentioned in the beginning of this episode. Abuse does not start and stop with Brianna. The statistics are staggering, heart-wrenching, and soul-destroying, and while there has been some progress in our legal system, it's not enough. There's so much to do to fix what's broken and what is breaking children's hopes, dreams, and understanding of what love is. On September 21st, 2016, just over 5 years ago, Stephanie Lopez was released from prison, having served less than half of her sentence. She was transferred to Texas under an interstate compact agreement to serve 2 years parole. Just hours after her release, she was seen in the backseat of a parked car at a gas station in Las Lunas, New Mexico. In an interview with the Las Cruces Sun News, Orlando Antonio Carrillo Jimenez, spokesman for the Baby Brianna Birthday Committee and the Baby Brianna Foundation, said the group was saddened by the news that Stephanie Lopez was being released. He said, quote, "We know that the laws at the time were not what they are now, and laws cannot be retroactive. We have no control over Ms. Lopez's release. There is no amount of time in prison or any other punishment that would ever make amends for the horrific actions against baby Brianna. Although the laws protecting children have tightened, children continue to be abused and neglected. Through community events and education, we hope to bring an end to these atrocities." End quote. Here at True Consequences, we do as well. We hope that the necessary laws are passed, that social programs are funded and strengthened, and that education is disseminated throughout cities, states, and counties for parents of all backgrounds and socioeconomic statuses. We hope that change comes, and that it comes sooner rather than later. The longer change takes, the more children will be in harm's way. I'm Eric Carter Lundin. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod, and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one-man show, please go to patreon.com/trueconsequences. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.